Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is using WebSphere Application Server Admin Console to manage WebSphere Partner Gateway resources. Today's presenter is Max Terpolilli. Max is an advisory software engineer who joined the WebSphere Partner Gateway Level 2 team about 7 years ago. He works closely with customers in development to drive WPG product to succeed in the marketplace. At this point in time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Max.
Yes, thank you, Joseph, and hello to our audience. This presentation purpose is basically to get the WPG users to familiarize themselves with how to use the WAF admin console to handle operations on WPG resources. Let's go to the next slide to take a look at the content of this presentation. So let's go to slide number 2. Yeah, this is the table of contents, which is divided in sections. We'll be starting with an overview of the WPG App Server in a WebSphere context. Then we'll take a look at the various WPG-related tasks that can be performed using the WAF admin console. And these tasks include starting and stopping the WPG app servers, managing the way WPG writes in logs, the interactions with the database, managing the JMS resources, and for the security-related items, we can take a look at how to enable the check for a certificate revocation list and enable the debug trace to investigate SSL-related issues. Let's go to the next slide, slide number 3. Starting with version 6, WPG has been integrated in the WASP platform and actually runs like an application server on WebSphere. Depending on the mode WPG is installed on, the underlying WAS can be ND or base. The ND, of course, will be used for distributed WPG setups, whereas you can use a base for simple mode, for example. Also, support for WAS 7 is granted with the WPG latest release, which is 6.1. Now, regardless of the mode WPG is installed, the WAS admin console can be used to help managing the WPG resources. So from the next slide on, we'll see some of the most common WPG operations that are handled using the WAS admin console. So let's go to the next slide, slide number 4. Starting and stopping WPG app servers is definitely an operation that can be performed using the WAS console. If WPG is installed in distributed mode, then the user can opt to start or stop the clusters, of course, instead of the single app server. Clusters can include the BCG mass, as well as the main WPG components, such as the console, receiver, and doc manager. In a simple distributed mode, the WPG components are all integrated in the same application server. Whereas in full distributed mode, each component is in its own app server, which can be installed in different nodes. So starting them in a distributed setup, starting them as a cluster may make things a little bit easier. The same start desktop operations can be performed on the enterprise applications as well. And there could be situations where you need to stop an application. And we can see that in the next slide, where we're going to see the screenshots of what I just mentioned, so we can better visualize these operations. So let's go to the next slide, slide number 5. Okay, so here is what I just mentioned. The top screenshot, for example, is where you start or stop the application servers. The middle one is where you start stop the clusters. And the bottom one shows the enterprise application start-stop. Now, in reference of the WAS console main pane, which is on the left of the console, you will be selecting the first two panels from the servers link, whereas the bottom panel can be selected from the application's entry. And you will have the selections always at the top of the right panel anyway, just so you will be able to know what path you're in. Let's go to the next slide, slide number 6. Now, oftentimes during the course of problem determination in a PMR, WPG support may ask customers to change the application server login. And here we have details on how and where this can be accomplished. The user can actually configure a number of things about logging. The max file size, for example, how many historical files to keep, the file name, and also can configure whether the logging should be enabled at all. Now, to change the actual logging, the logging details, the user can modify the string either in the configuration or runtime tab. And the difference here is going to affect whether the specific app server is going to need a restart or not. For WPG debug log, we typically use the string that ends with the finest word, as you can see at the bottom of the slide. So let's go to the next slide, slide number 7. And here the screenshots follow concerning what I mentioned in the previous slide. Now, you can see the one on the left shows the navigation to change the log details level. The one on the right shows the navigation to manage the properties values, such as buffer size, file name, and all those properties. In both screenshots, you see the option of entering your change in the configuration or runtime tab, depending on whether you want your changes to take place on the fly or not. Okay, let's go to the next slide, slide number 8. The WAS console allows you to manage some feature of the application database as well. For example, you can perform a connectivity test of the data sources, or you can update the database user password, for example. Let's go to the next slide to better see these operations in the actual screenshots. Go to slide number 9. And here, the top of the screen shows the database test connectivity button, which can be used for the various data sources. As you can see, when you do that, a message appears at the top of the screen prompting the user about the test results. So you basically have a message saying whether the connection was successful or not. And this is a very useful test that the user can use, you know, whenever there are suspicions of database connectivity issues. Let's go to the next slide, slide number 10. Now, some client centers have procedures to periodically change user passwords. So when that time comes, besides changing the password on the operating system, you're going to need to update the same for WPG as well. Now, this screenshot shows how to just do that using the WASAdmin console. And please always notice the reference to the navigation necessary to reach these specific locations as shown in the link at the top of each panel. Basically, it is in blue. You can see the reference. Let's go to the next slide, slide number 11. Now, the handling of the JMS resources is very critical for a correct WPG usage. However, oftentimes this is not quite easy to do unless, you know, you're familiar with the console navigation, of course. One of the items that WPG support often asks when there is the need to flush the application internal processing is to clear the product's JMS queues. This can be performed by stopping the WPG applications, then access the list of queues from the service integration selection. And as noted at the top of the slide, this operation is quite invasive because it basically goes into the WPG processing of the messages. So it is, you know, very recommended to use it with care and only when you're requested by WPG support. Similarly, you can also make a selection to just browse the contents of these queues. Now, let's go to the next slide to see this process in the screenshots. To slide number 12. Here, the top picture shows the selection to clear entries in one of the queues. In this case, I selected the main inbound queue, but the same concept applies for any other queue as well. The bottom picture is a different navigation that could be chosen if, for example, you want to browse the content. Let's go to the next slide, slide number 13. Now, if you need to configure a JMS receiver or a JMS destination to use the CBUS through WAS as opposed to using a bindings file, for example, you're going to need to perform some JMS configuration on the WAS console. Let's take a look at how this can be accomplished. What you need to do is, first of all, you have to create a new service integration bus. Then next, you need to create a member of this new service integration bus or CBUS. And then you're going to need to create a new queue that can be reached using the newly created CBUS. Let's take a look at screenshots in the next slide to better visualize it. Let's go to slide number 14. Here at the top of the screenshot, there is the new service integration bus, right below the WPG default BCG bus. The middle picture shows the new bus member created within the CBUS. And the bottom image shows the destination queue, destination queue identifier attached to the CBUS. Go to the next slide, slide number 15. Now, to be able to correctly configure a WPG GMS receiver destination, you're also going to need to define a QCF or queue connection factory, as well as a queue. For the QCF, the selection in the WAS console will be down the resources title. You drill down until you get to define the messaging provider, and from there create a new QCF. As far as creating the definition for the GMS queue, the drill down the resources selection is pretty much the same. This time you would click on the queue link instead of click on the QCF. As usual, let's take a look at the screenshots in the next slide so we can better visualize it. Let's go to slide 16. Okay, and here we have the picture of the QCF definitions. You need to fill out the required fields, of course, like you know, the name that you want to assign for this QCF, and then the JNDI name or the bus name, and the provider endpoint, which you can collect from the connection factories for the Doc Manager component, for example. Once the required fields are all filled, you can click OK and save the changes to the master configuration, of course. Let's go to the next slide, slide number 17. And this is the JMS queue definition, where you fill out, again, like we saw earlier, the required fields, like the name you want to assign to this queue, the JNDI name, of course. And then from a pull-down, select the destination queue you defined on the newly created bus member, as we saw earlier in slide 13. Once all the required fields filled out, click OK and save the changes to the master configuration. Go to the next slide, slide number 18. And the last JMS resource you need to define is the activation specification. And you can perform this task using the activation specification selection, which is located down the resources, JMS, and the JMS provider selection. Same as we saw earlier. And to better visualize this, we'll take a look at actual screenshot in the next slide, slide number 19. Okay, and as shown in the panel, you need to provide, of course, the name of the activation specification, the destination type, which in our case is a queue, the JNDI name, the bus name, and then you can, you can pretty much take all the defaults for the rest. Once the form in the panel is completed, as usual, you want to retain the changes by pressing OK and saving it to the master configuration. Okay, let's go to the next slide, slide number 20. Okay, so now that we're done with the JMS resources, let's take a look at a new subject, which in this case is enabling the certificate revocation list distribution point, or, you know, better known with the acronym CRLDP. And what that means is a CRL is a list of revoked certificates with all the serial number, name of the issuer, and revocation dates. The DP is the location where you can download the latest CRL. So in order to maintain your certificate updated and make sure that there is no revocation in place, it is a good rule to keep it enabled. So being this an action that needs to be performed in the application server's definitions, we proceed to access the app server's JVM and insert the appropriate command, which is a string in the generic JVM argument field. Notice that the string is slightly different depending on whether a proxy is used or not. If it is used, then we're going to need to add the proxy IP and the port number. And you can see that in the slide. You have both options. If no proxy is used, you use that string, whereas if there is a proxy, is the one below. Let's see this also in the actual screenshot. So let's go to the next slide, slide number 21. Here, as I mentioned before, is the screenshot for the CRL DP enablement. Notice the console navigation path as well, right at the top of the panel, so that will give you exactly how to move around in the console to get to that panel. And once the command is entered in the generic JVM argument fields, of course, like, all other changes that you want to keep, you press OK and save the changes to the master configuration. Let's go to the next slide, slide number 22. The same JVM generic argument field that we have been using to enable the CRLDP can be used also to enable the SSL debug trace using the appropriate string for debug. As you can see in the DJ javax net debug equal true. And this field can actually contain multiple statements, which they need to be separated by a column. Typically, WPG support asks for the SSL debug trace when there is some HTTP connection errors. And that usually happens, during the SSL and shaking protocol. And once you implement the changes and reproduce the error, you can collect the logs at the usual location for the specific WPG server. This is usually, requested by WPG support, again, when you have some SSL issue. So let's move to the next slide, slide number 23. And this is the last slide of the actual presentation and shows the screenshot of the actual panel that is used to enable the SSL trace in the JVM properties field. And with this slide, I turn the presentation to Joseph.
Thank you, Max, for a great presentation. At this point in time, Jackie, we would like to open the lines for questions.
We have no questions over the phone.
Thank you, Jackie. Looks like we don't have any questions in the web conference either. So at this point in time, we will conclude the presentation.